You may be seated. Our next case is 2015-1222, a state ex rel of the Cincinnati Inquirer versus Joe Dieters, Hamilton County Prosecuting Attorney. Mr. Greiner.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to again reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Greiner, this case, of course, is just as moot as the last one, but I assume the same argument applies. But I have a question. Did you, on behalf of your client, make a public records request?
Your Honor, there are six clients in this case. This would be the Cincinnati Enquirer, the Associated Press, and all four television stations.
But on behalf of the Enquirer, your normal client, did you make a request?
Yes, Your Honor.
A public records request?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Your Honor, the record in this case...
Did you make it of the prosecuting attorney?
We made it on the University of Cincinnati Police Department.
And they deferred to the prosecuting attorney. You did not make it on the prosecuting attorney, did you?
On behalf of the Enquirer. Three of the relators did make requests to the prosecutor directly. Three made the request and were told by the University of Cincinnati Police Department. They were instructed by the prosecutor not to release the footage. Your Honor, the record in this case discloses that at 6:34 p.m. on July 19th, Officer Ray Tenzing engaged in a traffic stop on a 1998 green Honda Accord, license plate number GLN6917. The reason for the traffic stop was that the vehicle was missing a front license plate. In the course of the traffic stop, Officer Tenzing drew his duty weapon, a Sauer P-32C, and fired a single shot. The driver, a man by the last name of DuBose, was left slumped over the steering wheel, motionless with a gunshot wound to the head. The vehicle came to a final stop at the corner of Rice Street and Valencia Street. The record I just described to you is not the record at issue. Every fact that I just relayed to you is set forth in the narrative on the incident report completed by Officer Eric Weibel. That same information, the traffic stop, the gunshot, the car proceeding to its final stop, is also captured on the body camera footage worn by Officer Tenzing.
When did you get that statement?
I believe it was released at midnight on July 19th.
So
promptly.
Promptly. Okay.
Your Honor, the written incident report and the footage are the same record in different media. And just as the Ohio Public Records Act requires production of a 9/11 transcript as well as the 9/11 tape itself, the body camera footage needs to be produced in the same manner as the written incident report. There's nothing in the body camera footage that was not disclosed in the written incident report.
Counsel, isn't it a little bit different in this situation, because what ends up happening is the police officer becomes the wrongdoer, defendant, acting, you know, criminally, right?
That is the case.
Okay,
here, yes.
It's not Mr. DuBose, the driver. It's a little bit of a different situation. Well, it's a significantly different situation here, because this is recording the activity of a police officer who was breaking the law.
I mean, he is charged with breaking the law,
right?
Certainly. I mean, I don't know that we can make that distinction.
All right, we'll say allegedly.
I think this case illustrates the point where I think the Maurer for sure can be applied, and I think Maurer could be applied to the previous case as well. But I think here, the traffic stop, the interaction with Mr. DuBose, up to, frankly, I believe the car, so when Mr. DuBose was shot, he slumped over the wheel, the car went and just stopped because it hit something. At that point, that is all recorded, again, that is recorded on the incident report, so release of the footage would not disclose any work product that was not already disclosed on the incident report that was already released.
Mr. Greiner, in this case, you're looking for the body camera video from the officer. And in the previous case, you wanted the dash cam video from the motor vehicle of the highway patrol officer.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are these two cases governed by the same law, in your view?
I believe they are.
And so it wouldn't make any difference the fact it's a body camera or not. It's the same issue.
I believe it's the same issue, Your Honor. And the issue is...
Go ahead.
I think two issues, really. One, is the dash cam video and the body cam video the functional equivalent of the incident report?
All right.
We believe, yes, it is. Second issue is, does the dash cam or the body cam disclose work product? And we would say no, it doesn't disclose. It doesn't disclose that which is captured already in the narrative on the incident report. So there is no disclosure by release of the footage, because the information that would even constitute any work product in that situation is already has been disclosed by virtue of the incident report, which
are
we know.
Are either investigative tools of law enforcement, in your view?
Your Honor, I need
are either of the videos investigative law enforcement tools, in your view?
I find it very hard to understand how a chase is an investigation. The Ohio Highway Patrol...
If an individual violates the law, does the officer have an opportunity to investigate that violation?
Yes, and I think that happens once in the first case today. That happens once the car comes to a stop, there's an arrest, and officers come on the scene. If you look at exhibit, I believe it's...
Are you saying that there has to be an arrest before an investigation?
No, Your Honor. It may
you
culminate
just said
there.
Once it's stopped and there's an arrest, then, but you're not qualifying
In the dash cam case, there happened to be an arrest.
Okay, but you don't need an arrest.
I don't need an arrest.
Okay.
No.
Suppose an object is thrown from a fleeing vehicle being pursued by an officer. Would there be some investigation as to whether it was a weapon or drugs or some other contraband? Would that be part of an investigation in your view or not?
I think there will be an investigation, but I don't think the highway patrol car is going to stop its pursuit and investigate that at that point. I think it's probably going to radio to somebody else and say, hey, something came out of that car, go get it. And I think that with that second car that comes and looks at that instrument, dusts it for fingerprints, that's investigation.
But counsel, you are trying to get the videos. And what I'm trying to understand is, when do you think you're entitled to the videos in these instances? At what point in time?
I think we are entitled to the video once the police and prosecutor review it, make a determination as to whether or not it's exempt, and then if they say it's exempt, then we'll fight about it if we need to, or believe it or not, we may agree with them occasionally. But the point here is, again, Your Honor, and I want to reiterate the point I made previously, these cases are not about timing. Here's why. The incident happened on July 19th. Okay. On July 22nd, the Hamilton County prosecutor had reviewed the footage and made the determination that it was exempt under clear. Now, if we had said on July 20th, hey, you didn't give us the tape, we're going to file a mandamus case, that would be a different situation. They had time. They had the time they needed to look at it and make their determination. We think their determination was erroneous.
But you obtained this video, did you not?
Ultimately, yes.
Okay. When in point of time did you receive it?
I believe it was on July 29th, I believe was the date.
And you requested it when?
We requested it on July 21st or 20th. July
okay.
20th.
So in 8 days, you got it?
Yes.
And why, then, is the case not moot, as Justice Pfeiffer raised earlier?
Because it could have been 8 months. It could have been 8 years. If clear applies to this, it could have been as long as the prosecutor felt like it. It could have been as long.
So it is about timing.
No. It's about classification.
What I'm not understanding is you got it in 8 days. You argue it could have been 8 months, but it's not about timing. Those are timing determinations, in my view.
The key issue here is the classification. If the prosecutor is correct in being able to classify the entire footage.
You just want the prosecutor to do it more quickly so that you can either agree or bring an action to get that footage?
The prosecutor did what they need to do in 3 days.
Okay, and you said, okay, I mean, I would presume that your position would be on the fourth day you should have received it.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
But, Your Honor, here's the important point. The prosecutor classified the entirety of the footage as subject to clear. And once that was done, that meant that he had no obligation to turn it over until the conclusion of the case, including habeas corpus,
okay,
which is forever.
Let me direct your attention to something else here. You say because the footage is the functional equivalent of an incident report?
Yes, Your Honor.
A narrative. Does the officer drafting the narrative say, after watching the video from the dash cam or the body cam, this is, or I've taken that into consideration, and here's my narrative about what happened. Is that part of the narrative?
I think it could be.
Okay.
I don't know how to answer it other than...
You read the narrative, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. Are you asking a specific case?
Yeah.
No, there's no reference to the footage in the narrative.
Okay.
In either this case... I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question.
Okay.
It's neither in this case nor in the previous case.
So how can you say that the narrative in this case or the previous case is the functional equivalent to an incident report when the incident report is what the officer himself or herself looked at, but not the benefit of the contents of the video, the film? That could show something diametrically opposed to what the officer says in his narrative or her narrative. Would you agree with that?
It happened in this case, frankly.
All right, well, right, but there's other issues related to this case. But you would agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor, but let me add.
So you've got the narrative here that presumably the police and the prosecutor are looking at. You've got this video that the police and the prosecutor are looking at and say, wow, there's a discrepancy here. We better investigate. Mm-hmm. Would you not agree that that's an investigation that is ongoing by the prosecuting attorney?
I think in your example, I think you're saying here's an incident report, here's the footage, there's a discrepancy, let's investigate. From that point forward, it's all investigatory, no question about it. But I think, Your Honor, the reason I say it's a functional equivalent is I have a lot of confidence in the police. I think they're conscientious. I think they're observant. I think they do a great job. And so
That's superhuman, though. And yeah. If their angle is different, there's plenty of studies out there and presentations. I've seen them about the erroneous perceptions that are given by a video cam. They are not as foolproof or the answer to exonerate or to blame law enforcement. They're just a tool.
I agree. Like, just like an incident report. I agree with you 100%.
Report is not a tool.
I think it tells the public what the police did, what they saw, what they observed, and
it tells the public what one police officer believes that it occurred. And the basis for that is not, we have to presume is the officer's personal observation, not a review of the video cam.
I think the word you just used there, observation. We have the officers. If we had, again, in Maurer, we had 4 narrative statements. We had statements from 4 different officers.
But here,
they are observations. The camera is another
but
form
here,
of observation.
But here, you started out by saying the incident report was turned over when?
I believe midnight of the 19th.
But the incident report was not prepared by Officer Tensing, was it?
It was not.
It was prepared by somebody else.
Correct.
So...
an officer on the scene who arrived on
yes,
the scene.
Yes, but following up on the Chief Justice, it seemed to me from that, it's a big leap to say, well, we get to see the video.
Well,
because, as you know, in this case, the video did not conform to what Officer Tensing claimed happened.
Correct, Your Honor, and I think that as a matter of law,
and so under the facts as you know them at this point, and now you have the video and you compared it with the incident report, and I assume you are also aware of what Officer Tenzing said at the time, there were these glaring inconsistencies. So doesn't that put it squarely from the start in a situation where an investigation has to be ongoing with respect to the video?
And that ongoing investigation is subject to clear. But the events up to that investigation are not subject to clear, and that's exactly what Maurer says.
You're claiming a right under the First Amendment to this video. Is that right?
No, we have a right under the Public Records Act to this video. The First Amendment right would be if Mr. DeBose had pulled out his phone and recorded the interaction. He had the First Amendment right to do that. And my point is, I don't understand how someone can say that there's any confidential law enforcement technique, because it can't be confidential, because the First Amendment says in the situation with Mr. DeBose, he had an absolute First Amendment right to record it. So how can you say it's confidential?
So your claim is under the public record statutory right to this information, to this video?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Does the Fourth Amendment right of Officer Tenzing play into your statutory right, his right to a fair trial, as opposed to what may be prejudicial viewing of a video that you obtained by statute? And is that a basis to withhold that video?
Well, I just want to understand, you said the Fourth Amendment, then you said his fair trial right. So are we talking about the Fourth Amendment or the
Fifth Amendment? I'm sorry.
The Sixth Amendment? Your question is the Sixth Amendment?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I think that we dealt with that somewhat in the Sage case.
Pardon me?
In the Sage case with the confession on the 911 tape, where there was an assertion by the prosecutor that he did not turn it over because of the Sixth Amendment rights, and this court rejected that argument. And I think that, Your Honor, again, I trust the police and I trust the system. And adverse pretrial publicity does not necessarily result in an unfair trial. This court has so held, and held so as recently as the Sage decision, because you have voir dire, you have sequestration, you have the possibility of
change
of venue.
Yes, but wouldn't a pool be tainted had the video been shown?
No, Your Honor.
I'm sure it would be shown maybe just once or twice.
I don't believe that the possibility of seeing it taints the jury. The issue isn't adverse.
It wouldn't taint the jury. It would taint the pool from which the jury would come.
Again, the fact that the jury sees what happened as opposed to reading, they're going to read accounts about it. This is just simply, frankly, a more accurate version of the incident report. Again, I think that if you had four officers providing narratives
A more accurate depiction of the incident report?
I think it's arguably a more accurate depiction of the incident.
So you're saying it's like a digital witness, in other words, a video, but it's on the body of the officer, correct?
Right, and we can take that into account.
So would we have problems with self-incrimination?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. There was no charge at that point. I think that the officer is engaged in, and he knows that he's got the camera on him, and he's doing his duty.
But if you're saying the video is acting as a witness and making a statement as to what is happening, and it's on the body of the individual, does that imply or implicate?
I believe that the incident report is intended to be as comprehensive and as detailed a report of what the police did in that setting. I think that's the purpose of it. I think that the video, although it is from one perspective, one angle, but that is similarly a collection of what happened. It is a film version of the narrative.
And you said there were no charges at that point, but wouldn't the prosecuting attorney or others be investigating the matter to determine if charges should in fact be brought?
The investigation.
Does that cause law enforcement to say we're not going to release this?
The investigation began after that car came to a stop. Other police came on scene, and at that point, I think you could fairly say the investigation commenced.
But there may or may not have been charges forthcoming.
Right. But there's an investigation. There clearly was an investigation.
So you think because it's you think the investigation begins when the car comes to arrest, not beforehand?
I think that in Maurer, the court said the incident report initiates the investigation. I mean, that's what Maurer says.
Counsel, I guess I'm concerned by the fact that you continue to say this case is not about timing, mm-hmm. and yet you got the video in, is it 8 days?
I believe it was about 8 days.
And the Attorney General's office suggests that you are trying to ask us to do a new public records law that the General Assembly has already done.
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. Again,
why not?
Because I come back to the issue is the classification. If this is subject to clear, then it can be held indefinitely. If it is not subject to clear, then it needs to be promptly produced. That's the issue. The prosecutor in 3 days decided what this classification was. We think that's erroneous. That's the issue before this court.
Well, Mr. Greiner, you keep saying it's not about timing, but you also agree that the incident report, which you got that night, and what's on the video don't square up with each other. So it would seem to me that the officers investigating this and then the prosecutor who is looking at this immediately said, got a problem here. Tenzing is saying one thing, the video seems to be saying something else. So you're into an investigation right away. So what's your argument about, and you acknowledge once there's an investigation, they don't have to disclose it.
The investigation is prompted by the discrepancy. What if it were two narratives that were had a discrepancy? There'd be an investigation at that point too, but that wouldn't mean that they could hold the narratives under Maurer. I mean, that's the issue, Your Honor. The investigation begins from the discrepancy. If the narratives were a discrepancy, there'd be an investigation.
So you're saying because the film was taken before the investigation started, we get to see the film, period.
It is not subject to clear because it is the functional equivalent of the incident report, and it is completely in line with Maurer to produce that footage along with the incident report.
Okay, you've got me going in circles, so I.
So if we classify it as something other than an incident report, I mean, we have to accept your argument that this is like an incident report, and we may determine that this video is different.
Your Honor, even if you do determine, that the footage is subject to the clear analysis, it still should have been produced because release of the footage does not disclose work product. Because we know exactly, the incident report tells you the purpose of the stop, that there was a shot fired as a result of the stop, and that the car came to a stop down the block. We know all of that from the incident report. That is what the footage shows. So release of the footage does not disclose new or secret information. That is the definition of disclose. That's very important because otherwise you have to read the law as saying if the contents of the record disclose work product. It doesn't say that. It says, does release of the record disclose work product? There's a very important difference.
What if there were some colloquy recorded on that video? Would that disclose new information in your view?
It could. One thing, Your Honor, I want to get back to something from the previous argument where Justice O'Connor said you want everything. The point is, the prosecutor takes the position that this whole footage from start to finish, and in the dash cam case as well, there's simply no effort to say, you know what, the chase isn't an investigation. So let's see the chase. After when the chase ends and maybe police come and start questioning and start dusting for fingerprints, okay, I could sort of accept that maybe that's
an investigation. How about in this case? You said that the vehicle comes to a stop that was in the incident report.
Right.
That's when you think the investigation begins.
Yes.
That's your argument.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
What if there were some colloquy between the motorist and the officer on the dash cam video that wasn't in the incident report? Would that be new information and therefore preclude disclosure?
I think that gets to what is the purpose of an incident report. I think the purpose of the incident report is to record comprehensively and fully. However, if the
prosecutor... You can't say that a colloquy would be new information.
Well, I think it belongs in the incident report.
Well, if it's not in the incident report and it is in the dash cam, in the body cam video, what is it in your view?
I would make two arguments, Your Honor. One, I believe that yes, the body cam footage should be released with that colloquy. However, at a minimum, that colloquy should be redacted. But that didn't happen here. We just didn't get anything.
When you say you didn't get anything in the 3 days.
We did not get anything upon request when it should have been produced.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Douglas?
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, honorable members of the court, counsel. My name is Andy Douglas, and I'm an attorney for this case for the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office, not death penalty cases. I'm also with the firm of Crabb, Brown, and James, and my partner, Larry James, is here with me, along at counsel table with Michael Friedman, Roger Friedman, and Chris Schaefer, assistant prosecutors. I recognize that the court has decided and indicated that you wanted to hear the merits of this case. Nevertheless, I have to respectfully say to the court once again that it seems to me that Mr. Greiner and I have real differences about what this case is about. I'm not sure we're arguing about the same case. You asked the question specifically, did the inquirer make a request? All you need to do is look at their own affidavits. Four out of the six relators that stand before you today never made a request to the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office. That includes the inquirer. The inquirer made the request from the University of Cincinnati, and another request was made by another media from the Cincinnati Police Department. The only people that made a request from the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office did not make the request until Thursday, the 23rd, and this board will point that out to you, and you can see what happened. On Thursday, and you don't count the Thursday, but Thursday the first request was made, and then secondly, in comes the second request from WKRC. That's Friday afternoon, Your Honors, July 24th at 1:54 p.m. At 5:18 on that same day, less than 4 hours later, this case was filed. The tape was released 4 working days. If you don't count Saturday and Sunday, it isn't 9 days. The request came in on Friday. We had Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and the tape was released on Wednesday.
So, counsel, are you suggesting that, over here, counsel, gotcha. Are you suggesting this case is or is not about timing?
I'm suggesting that this case is moot, Your Honor. This case is moot, but it is about timing as well.
Counsel, what I hear your friend Mr. Greiner saying is that it's not about timing, it's about whether the prosecutor has any discretion in deciding whether to release the video.
And I'm coming to that, Your Honor, and surprisingly, maybe to Mr. Greiner, I can say the prosecutor should not have discretion with regard to the release of the video, and that's video. And that's why, towards the end of my argument, I intend to say to the court, if you find this is a public record, I think it is not. And if I might just digress for just a moment on that issue. You want to know when the investigation started. The investigation started when that officer activated his camera. There'd been no other reason for him to do that. But giving him the best of it, to answer the Chief Justice's question, when did that investigation really start? When he went up to that window, and that tape is as clear as it can be when you look at it. He went up to the window, and the window came down, and his question was, why do you think I stopped you? And there was an actual exchange of verbiage between this driver and this officer, and it was an investigation.
But isn't that an investigation of a different crime than the investigation of what the officer may have done and whether that was appropriate. I mean, the investigation, as I understand it, that you're talking about is the officer's investigation of what the car was doing, of what the individual was doing. And is that really the investigation we're talking about today?
No, Your Honor, I don't agree with that, and I can tell you respectfully why. He was stopped because he didn't have a front license plate, which indicates to law enforcement any number of things where there's no front license plate. That was the crime. It wasn't that he was in the car. It wasn't that he didn't have a driver's license. It wasn't that some other activities were going on in that car, and that case is pending, and I don't want to get into that, but I can tell you that I think the investigation started when he saw there was no license plate and approached that car.
But, counsel, I guess I'm going to have to take issue over to your right. Andy, on your right.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to take issue with what you're saying. You say there's no other reason to activate that camera. Is that really true in this day and age? Isn't it a fact that police officers will activate the camera to document what's going on as opposed to commencing an investigation?
No, sir, Justice O'Neill, and that's an interesting point that I don't even have in my argument. This last week I was with the Attorney General's Committee on Crime Enforcement or some such thing, and there were two safety directors in that meeting who specifically said, we're not going to have body cameras. Two others said, we have a different procedure and policy. One of them said, the officer determines when they're turned on, and the other department says they're turned on when there's going to be any meaningful contact with the public. So that was one of my next arguments, that this court has often deferred to the General Assembly when there's public policy issues involved.
And well, who creates that policy within the police department? Isn't it something that is done internally?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. But there is no set, as a matter of fact, the bill pending in the General Assembly now on these cameras, these issues, specifically does not provide for uniform regulations between the departments.
So can we say that these are sometimes going to be confidential techniques or specific confidential investigatory techniques and sometimes they are not, depending on the policy of the department?
I think that would be true, and this court has said that we judge these cases on a case-by-case basis. But my thought process was that you didn't take it to judge cases on a case-by-case basis. You took it to see if you could establish some rules. And I still
think there's nothing wrong with reiterating that we're going to take them on a case-by-case basis.
I'll be for that. If you do that, Your Honor, this case is moved. And in addition to that, let me just say to you that unanimous court, and Justice O'Donnell writing for unanimous court in the very case he cites, the Cincinnati Enquirer case, this is such an unsettled law, and yet he's asking for attorney's fees. And my points there would be that courts should not be in the practice of punishing parties for taking a rational stance on an unsettled issue. The Miller case that he recites, and it was very interesting, and I'm way off of my notes now, but he cited the Miller case to you, and he said before that there's no quantitative difference, I think he's probably meaning, between a body camera and a dash camera. That's so far from accurate. That dash camera doesn't go into your bedroom. It doesn't go into the bathroom. It doesn't go into a myriad number of private places where these body cameras go. And so there is a quantitatively and a qualitative difference. The law investigatory record you've already heard about under A1H, and I think that when the camera is turned on, it becomes a law investigatory matter, and it is subject to clear
exception. Does that have to be the exclusive use for the camera? You know, there was questions asked here by the justices about what's the purpose of a camera, both either a dashboard or a body cam, and you know, investigative, is one use, but if there is an additional use, documenting what the interaction is between the police and the public, officer safety, protecting officers from undue accusations by people who don't want them in their homes. You know, the ability for the officer, the protection of the actual citizens, you know, because there obviously are allegations that an officer used undue force, et cetera. So there's a variety of reasons why you have body cams in particular, and in addition to that, dash cams. So the investigatory purpose, let me put it a different way, these tangential purposes for a body cam do not negate the fact that it's an investigative tool.
I agree with that, Your Honor, and I agree with the converse as well. Not always is it an investigative tool. An officer may have a body camera on when he stopped on the street or she stopped on the street and said, what are the directions to get to the art museum? That wouldn't be a law investigatory.
But you would also, you wouldn't, I thought I heard you say as soon as the camera is turned on, it becomes an investigative tool. Did I not hear that?
You did hear that, and that flows from the arguments that you've heard before that I'd like it all.
Okay, so
I'd like
so
it from the very
agree,
start.
And we talked about this with opposing counsel, that it might be appropriate for certain parts of the video to be deemed non-investigative, and others, you know, would be investigative. And it would be the same video, same camera, same officer.
But that argument then brings in the argument of redaction.
Correct.
And redaction in these cases, obviously you've heard a number of these cases in your other capacities, and I've tried them as well. A good defense lawyer is going to say, did you redact that? Well, yes, we redacted it, and what'd you take out of it? Oh, sure, that's all you took out of it, just the first approach. Redaction doesn't work. Besides that, we didn't have time to redact it in the very short period of time we had to produce
and
it.
And I understand point that you're making, but the consequential use of the video is not before us. Whether it's used at trial, whether it's not used at trial, whether it's deemed inadmissible evidence, or et cetera, we're talking about the hours, you know, the days that it takes for a prosecuting attorney to deem this an exception to 149, and the exception based on the enumerated categories. So it's not anything that was consequential, its use.
No, there are several exceptions that this would apply, not just the work product exception, but also the exception under C, which talks about the uncharged suspect. There are a number of those matters, but let me, for purpose of this argument, if you will, Your Honor, concede that it's a public record. I don't want to concede that because I think that there's so many ramifications that brings about that this court, none of us sitting in this room, can figure
so
out.
So are you or are you not conceding that it's a public record?
I am conceding that it is a public record at some point.
All right. And
the question becomes, Your Honor, what is a reasonable time? In the Wad case, you said 8 days was a reasonable time.
Well, looking at your chart, one thing I don't see that I thought happened here was this case presented to the grand jury before the video was released.
That's in the next part of my argument. Let me set the scene for you. The prosecutor in Hamilton County gets back from someplace or other. We don't get the tape. We had an assistant prosecutor on the scene that afternoon, that night. An assistant prosecutor was there gathering this evidence. Forgetting that, then the prosecutor himself, we get a demand on Monday. We don't have the tape. And Tuesday he starts to see the tape himself, and Wednesday, and recognizes there are going to be some problems with this case. Finally, on Thursday, we get the first legitimate request. And Friday, if you counted from that day, we get the request that we act on.
But during that period of time,
he then,
Counsel, during that, prior to the request.
He convened a grand jury.
That's not my question. Prior to the request and prior, the prosecuting attorney corralled and sequestered all of the videos. They were in his possession, correct?
I can't answer that, but I think the answer to that is no. I think the University of Cincinnati still had their tape.
They had their tape.
Right. Cincinnati gave it to the Cincinnati Police Department, but I think they each still had a copy. All I know is we didn't receive a copy until that Tuesday.
Well, you know, I mean, your scenario, you would admit that there was a public records request by some of these parties of the University of Cincinnati. And if you're telling me that they retained a copy, then they were appropriately asked, correct? Because I thought this was premised on the fact that the prosecuting attorney of Hamilton County had control over this video, and now you're telling me that both Cincinnati Police and the UC Police had the video.
I'm telling you that's to the best of my knowledge, but let's accept that as being accurate. They sued the wrong people. They should have sued Cincinnati or the University of Cincinnati educational institution. This is not even a record of our office. Under 11G, as you all know, the procedures, the structure and so forth is what requires it to be a public record. This doesn't document the record of the prosecutor's office in any way.
I think what the chief was driving at is, did the prosecutor's office advise the University of Cincinnati and the Cincinnati Police Department to withhold?
The prosecutor's office did say to them that we would like the tapes withheld until after our investigation, but under the statute, as Your Honor knows, the county prosecutor has no control, does not advise the University of Cincinnati or the Cincinnati Police Department.
Okay, whenever
Mr. Greiner says we ordered them to do it, that just isn't accurate.
But when was the presentation to the grand jury? I know, as I recall, Prosecutor Dieters held a very public press conference. Strongly indicating that he felt the police officer had violated the law. But when did he go to the grand jury? When was the press conference? When did he go to the grand jury?
I concede to you that the prosecutor was disturbed. And what happened was we convened the grand jury, and I was there. We convened the grand jury as quickly as could have been convened. It started hearing evidence early that week. On the next Wednesday, is when the indictment was given, and at 1:30 in the afternoon.
Well, then you're saying on the 23rd, that's a Thursday, but the grand jury had already returned an indictment on the 22nd?
No, ma'am. The grand jury didn't return the indictment until the next Wednesday.
All right.
The same day the video's released.
Wednesday the 29th, the same day the video's released.
Exactly. Okay. And what happened was the prosecutor was not taking kindly to my advice. He didn't want to release it at all. And
okay,
I said,
all right, let me ask you another question. That you say that they jumped the gun on filing suit on that Friday when their first legitimate request, and that, you know, subject to debate, was from the AP on Thursday the 23rd.
That was their first legitimate request. By the statute, of course, you don't count the first day. So
okay,
Friday
and so you say that
day.
They jumped the gun by filing suit there. But that wouldn't be the case. Well, I guess it would be against the prosecuting attorney's office. But to take from Thursday or Friday to the following Wednesday to release it, and you're not going to count the weekend you said, you think that's a reasonable time for this?
I do, and your case law has said anywhere from 8 days to 56 days is a reasonable time.
Okay, but you're not using the benchmark of presentation to the grand jury as a time that the release is triggered by. Are you saying that that is the definitive mark of when this video should be released? Because if your argument is it may taint the pool, what pool? The grand jury? No. You're talking about a jury pool. So how can you have it both ways?
Here's your problem with releasing the tape, and we see it so often. The tape gets released, and all of a sudden, it's, and by the way, in this modern age, it now goes on Facebook almost more quickly than it does even on the 6 o'clock news, and it's there forever. But what happens is the grand jury was convening during those 2 days, hearing the evidence. What the prosecutor was worried about was not only tainting the grand jury pool, but the witnesses. We had witnesses come forward in this case that weren't even at the scene. We had a discrepancy in the police officer's testimony from what you eventually will see the tape shows. We had, and his worry was that. His bigger worry, not just the Sixth Amendment worry, but, and I need to set the scene for you, there were substantial rumblings in the community with regard to what had happened that day. We didn't have the same problems because we didn't release that tape. We didn't have the same problems that they had in Ferguson and Baltimore. And the prosecutor, in his mind, and I was there, was concerned about the safety of his community. He did all of these things, and for protecting the community, for protecting the uncharged suspect, protecting the process, he got sued.
As I understand your argument, Mr. Douglas, you think the request here is moot because the information has been released. Is that the essence of your position?
That's the first position, Your Honor. And secondly, the position is we did it within a reasonable time.
All right. And
that's what the statute says.
And it's only the request of AP and WKRC.
That's correct.
That were timely.
Yes, sir.
To whom was the video released?
To the entire press at 1:30 after the grand jury in that morning returned the indictment. We met with the family, showed the family the video, showed it to Mark O'Mara of the Florida Zimmerman case, a good lawyer. I met with him, and we showed the tape to his clients and to him, and at 1:30 the prosecutor released it to the public.
All right, so the case pending here, insofar as the Cincinnati Inquirer and others is concerned, what is your position with respect to that request, that mandamus request for us to order this delivered?
From the Inquirer's position?
Yeah, no.
I don't think the Inquirer has any position here at all, frankly.
So that request, in your view, should be dismissed as moot? Is that it, or just dismissed because they never made the request? What is your view?
Both, whatever you'd like to have, both. My view is four of these relators shouldn't even be here.
Counsel, didn't you also say that it would be inappropriate for a public records request to go to the prosecutor's office because the attorney isn't the proper recipient, that it should be the public office itself, in this case, the police department, that should be the recipient of the request? So in my mind, it seems you're trying to have it both ways. On the one hand, you're saying they don't have any standing because they never made a request, but you're also saying, but we're not the proper place for the request anyway. So can you clarify that for me?
I'll be happy to, Your Honor. I guess like most lawyers, we make arguments the alternative. The fact is that the request went to the other public offices, and that's who should have been sued, if anybody should have been sued in this case. Once we have the record, and they say that it's a record of our office, which I dispute, then once we have it in our possession, and we get demands, we respond.
And you did have it in your possession. It was being kept by the prosecuting attorney. According to the Kish case, any record that a government actor uses to document the organization's policies, functions, decisions, procedures, operations, or other activities can be classified as a public record. Here, the prosecutor would use that video, and it was part of the prosecuting attorney's file, to perform its functions.
If you make it the part of the prosecutor's file, then I would refer the court, I guess, to what Justice French, writing for the court, said, that the First Amendment does not give the inquirer the right to open the prosecutor's evidence locker. I don't think
was it, that about a public record? I mean, was that
was,
that was.
Was
a video?
It wasn't a video. There are no cases on the video, and that's why we're here.
Okay. What did the inquirer want in that case? I don't recall.
I think that, again, it was another incident report. And by the way, when you talk about, he talks about the Maurer report, the Maurer case. That's all incident reports that are, again, quantitatively different, just like 9/11 tapes. I remember the 9/11 tape issue really clearly because what the thought process was at that time is that it comes from a public citizen, it goes to a public dispatcher, a dispatcher who is not law enforcement, and therefore there's no law investigatory technique with regard to or no law investigatory
record. That's not what we have here.
So it shouldn't be an incident report or a 9/11.
Okay, thank you. You've used your time.
Before you sit down, Mr. Douglas, you said your first position was that this is moot. Your second position was what? You hadn't had a chance to clarify that.
That it's exempt under the statute, 149.43 is not a public record. And finally, because of the considerations of a prosecutor, if I might just have 1 minute to conclude, Your Honor. Let me conclude with this.
You're already 11 minutes over.
Okay, fine. I can only tell you, the lead plaintiff, the Inquirer, wrote the next day about what a great job the prosecutor had done.
Counsel, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Greiner, you've used your time. You may.
I think we've beat the horse pretty hard.
Let me ask you this question. You indicated to us in your initial presentation that the Cincinnati Inquirer had made a request of the prosecuting attorney's office for these records. And if I understood Mr. Douglas's position, the only requests that were received were from the Associated Press and from WKRC.
Your Honor, I think
so I will ask you again, did the Cincinnati Inquirer submit a public record request to the prosecuting attorney's office in this case?
Your Honor, the question was, did the Inquirer make a public records request? That was the question. We did. We made the request to the University of Cincinnati Police Department. The prosecutor's office on July 22nd said this is not going to be produced. On July 22nd, that was the email from the prosecutor's department. I would simply recommend.
The Inquirer never made a request to the prosecuting attorney for these records.
We did not. But I would, Your Honors, I would simply ask that you take a look at the affidavit of Mark Pietmeyer, the affidavit of Julie Wilson. That will lay out the timeline. We'll tell
I'm
you.
I'm sure
the
we'll get a careful look. The question that I have then is, Mr. Douglas suggests that the case is moot because you never made a request, a mandamus request. What is your response to his argument? Because you never made the request, this case is moot, should be dismissed.
The statute refers to the person responsible for the record. The prosecutor, in fact, again, that's if you look at Mr. Pietmeyer's affidavit, did in fact have all of the version, all the copies of this, he says.
The prosecutor did.
Yes.
Okay.
But it was a record of
that
the
is the person responsible for the record. That's who we sued. We ultimately sued the person responsible
was
for the record.
Was the record belonging, that you sought, belonging to the University of Cincinnati? Was it a record of that institution?
That's what we thought. That's why we made the request to them.
But they had been physically removed from UC Police and the Cincinnati Police Department, whether they ever had one, CPD, and they were in the possession and being kept by the prosecuting attorney.
That's my understanding from reading Mr. Pietmeyer's affidavit.
Okay, so you would agree that UC had no way to to answer your request because they no longer had the video.
And the person responsible for the record answered the request.
But
it was the prosecutor.
And before filing the suit, you didn't make a public request of the prosecutor's office.
The Enquirer did not. Two of the relators did.
But we're talking about the Enquirer here.
We did not make a we did not make a futile request of the prosecutor. Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.